Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov.
This morning I'd like to explore together with you the strange custom of dressing in costumes on Purim. And it is a strange custom. And I first asked myself this question of why do we dress up on Purim? You know, I took it for granted growing up, dressing in costumes, seeing others dressing in costumes. I just took it for granted that there was such a custom. But I began asking myself, what is the source for this custom? Why do we dress in costume when, over 10 years ago, I was in Frankfurt, Germany as a scholar in residence. Around this time of year, it was late February, right before Purim. And all of a sudden, I see people in costume. And this is, you know, a week or two before Purim, but these people walking around in costumes and in masks are not part of the Jewish community whom I was there speaking to, and adults and children were not observing Halloween. That is back in late October. And so I began to ask myself, what's with these costumes? What are they doing? And I did a little research, and especially in Europe, in places like, for instance, Italy, if you go to Venice this time of year, right, over the past 2 weeks, they've been observing something known as Carnival. What is Carnival? Carnival is where they get dressed up in costumes and wear masks and go masquerading and have balls. And they party, right? Party like there's no tomorrow in advance of Lent. Now, you'll have to excuse me. I'm not much of a scholar in Christianity or in Catholicism, but the Catholics observe Lent from today, Wednesday, February 22nd is the first day of Lent. What's today? The 23rd? 22nd? Today's the 22nd. Okay, it's the first day of Lent. It's Ash Wednesday. Okay, again, you know, you'll have to excuse my ignorance. I don't know too much, but it begins this six-week process, if you'd call it. I don't know how to describe it. This six-week Lent, where they fast and abstain from certain things, like they'll abstain from meat. The Catholics, especially in Italy, the Roman Catholics, they'll abstain from meat and other delicacies and things. Okay, and without going into why and all the symbolism, that's beyond the scope of our shiur this morning. It's also, you know, I'm here to teach Torah, not Catholicism. But it culminates with Easter. So 6 weeks before Easter, they have this period of Lent. Period. We'll call it a period. The six-week period of Lent where they swear off of all sorts of things, including meat and some fast. And before Lent, however, they go crazy and party like it's no tomorrow, right? Okay. So you have developed this custom in the Middle Ages of Carnival, and what's interesting is, you know, it develops in Italy, and the masks, we're all familiar with those, you know, Italian masks, and you've seen pictures of Venice around this time of year, and people will travel to Venice in February to see the masquerading and participate in the balls, etc. So what's interesting is the earliest mention of a custom to dress up on Purim in Jewish sources comes from around 14th and 15th century Italy. Okay, is that a mere coincidence, or were the Jews of Italy in the 14th and 15th centuries, were they influenced by their Catholic neighbors and maybe started dressing up? It's, you know, that's something that scholars and academics discuss. It's not so clear. It's really not so clear if that is the origin for the custom. But in any case, what is clear is that the first mention, or one of the first mentions of the minhag, custom to dress up in costume on Purim, comes from a tshuva of the Mahari Mintz. Mahari Mintz lived in the 15th century, died in 1508. He lives in 15th century Italy. He lives in Padua. Long-standing Jewish community in Padua, a very interesting community, but not for now. It's not far at all from Venice. So just interesting that the first mention, or one of the earliest mentions of a custom to dress up on Purim, comes from 15th century Italy. And in this tshuva, he defends what is a very peculiar custom, a very strange custom, of men wearing women's clothing on Purim and women dressing up as men on Purim. So the first mention of dressing up in costume on Purim, or one of the earliest mentions, is this tshuva of the Mahari Mintz in 15th century Italy, where he's defending this practice, very strange custom, of wearing clothes that belong to the opposite gender. And here I put a passage, source number one, from the Darkei Moshe. The Darkei Moshe is the commentary of Rav Moshe Isserles, the Ramah, to the Tur. And there in Siman Tafresh Tzadivav, he cites this tshuva of the Mahari Mintz, lives a century earlier. But you'll see why I cite this passage, because the Darkei Moshe here will raise another issue, and that is wearing costumes which contain kilayim, which contain shatnez, which contain prohibited mixtures of wool and linen. Okay? So he writes the following. Look at source number one. Katav Mahari Mintz b'tshuva siman. It's either Yud Zayin or Tetvav. It's at the very end. It's the last tshuva of the Mahari Mintz. V'zeh l'shono. This is what he says. Al davar levishata partsufin. Concerning wearing masks, shenoagin bepurim, im yesh lachush bazeh mishum lo yilbash gever simlat isha, o lo yeh klei gever al isha. Is there a concern for this prohibition, say for Dvarim, Perek Tetvav, that men should not wear women's clothing and women should not wear men's clothing? Now, you know, what that exactly means is beyond the scope of our discussion this morning. I'm not giving a class on lo yilbash or lo tilbash, but the way many understand it, Rashi in his comments there on the Torah, as well as many others, that the prohibition is because of znut, it's because of promiscuity. People would wear the clothing of the opposite gender to seduce individuals. Okay. And you'll see why the tam ha-mitzvah, or the tam ha-isser here, is important to the conversation. The minag pashut, the ein mochet, and it's a minhag that has proliferated, spread, and there's no need to protest. The Mahari Mintz defends the custom. Ve'arich b'tshuva, and he goes on in his tshuva, his lengthy limtso heter ledavar. The Rama says, in his Darkei Moshe, he wants to find a heter, an allowance, a leniency to allow this or defend the practice that has developed. Mishum d'me'acher, or d'me'achar d'ish v'isha shavin bo, lo shach mishum lo yilbash. The first reason that the Mahari Mintz gives in the tshuva is, since men and women are already equal concerning this, we'll see what that means, there's no violation of lo yilbash. Now, what does that mean? So if you take a look at the actual tshuva, the Mahari Mintz cites the Talmud Yerushalmi. In the Talmud Yerushalmi, there's a prohibition for men to look in the mirror. Okay, prohibition on men to look in the mirror. Why? Because that is considered, and I don't want to offend anyone here, we have women here. Okay. Because it's considered, you know, the behavior of women to look in the mirror, and maybe a man who looks in the mirror is in violation, according to the Talmud Yerushalmi, of lo yilbash gever simlat isha. Okay, however, the Mahari Mintz assumes that today that prohibition doesn't apply, because men do today look in the mirror. Men do use mirrors today. And so that's what he means by men and women are equal, meaning as far as engaging in something which is not exactly cross-dressing, not exactly wearing the clothing of the opposite sex, but instead some other related prohibition, if the concern is no longer a concern, right? Men look in the mirror, men and women are the same in this regard. Okay, and you'll see he'll add another reason. If the intent is purely part of Simchat Purim, part of the merrymaking of Purim, so then it's not really a concern. You know, they're not wearing clothing of the opposite sex in order to engage in licentiousness or promiscuity, but they're doing it as part of the merrymaking. It's part of Simchat Purim. And that's what he writes next. V'tug nimtza b'shem riva al ha'bachurim shechotfim b'purim afilu shelo b'reshut. There was this custom that the Riva mentions for young men to go around on Purim and grab things. They would grab things that didn't belong to them, okay? It was not in their reshut, and it was without permission, shelo b'reshut. Mishat mikra migila ad sof sudat Purim. They would do it all day long, from when they began reading the Megillah all the way through the Sudat Purim, which is typically towards the end of the day. Shehem shtei leilot v'yom echad. And not just that, but it would sound like, you know, maybe into Shushan Purim as well, because you extend the Suda into the next day in Shushan Purim in Chutz Laaretz. There's such a custom to do that, to celebrate a little bit on Shushan Purim as well. So that's how you get the two nights, meaning the entirety of Purim, they would be grabbing things that didn't belong to them. And ein bo mishum gezel. It's not like theft. The ein lahazminam l'din al zeh, right? And you don't bring them to a din Torah. You don't bring them to in front of the Beit Din for this. Why? Ubilvad shelo yasu shelo kehogen al pi shiva tuvei ha'ir. So long as they're not doing things that are improper according to the seven wise individuals of the city. Okay, Hare Katav, for the Riva writes to defend this practice, Mishum Simchat Purim Leika Lemechash Leisur Lo Tigzol. Since it's all part of the merrymaking of Purim, Simchat Purim, they're not in violation of the prohibition of stealing, of Lo Tigzol. Okay? As part of the merrymaking, it's not theft. It was, in other words, it was accepted. It was accepted. That's the difference. You know, young people coming into your home, you invite them to your home, they're grabbing Hamantashen, Osnei Haman. It was part of the merrymaking. Similarly, by the way, we have in the halachic literature discussions of what if a person does damage on Purim. Okay? And it's a whole discussion beyond the scope, again, of our conversation together this morning, our shiur this morning, but what if a person does damage? So there is an opinion, and the Rama cites this opinion, that they are exempt from compensating for the damage done. Why? Because it's all part of Simchat Purim, right? Since their intent is not to cause damage. They didn't want to, you know, when the drunk yeshiva bachrim came into your house to collect tzedakah for their yeshiva, and they're swinging from your chandeliers, right? Their kavana was not to break your crystal chandelier, but their kavana was Simchat Purim. The kavana was the merrymaking. And if it's done, toch kedei mitzvah, that's also a large discussion. We've touched on that in the past, related to different topics. If something is done as part of a mitzvah, right, as part of a mitzvah, so one is exempt from paying for those damages. So the Mahari Mintz, in his tshuva, cites this riva, how young men would go around and grab things, okay, that didn't belong to them, and it was accepted. And they're not in violation of Lo Tigzol. And so he says, Hachinami, so to hear Benidon Didan concerning our discussion, Sheminakrim Bipart Sufin L'Shem Simchat Purim, when these men are dressing up like women as part of Simchat Purim, what is the Kavana, right? So, Leika L'Meichash L'Yisur Lo Yubash Adkan Lashon HaTshuva. The Marimin says, there's no Isur of Lo Yilbash, or lo tilbash. Why? Because their intent is not to dress up in the clothing of the opposite sex in order to engage in licentiousness or promiscuity. No. The intent is Simchat Purim. Just like these young bachrim go around and grab the hamintasha. Okay. The efshar shemizeh, and now the Darkei Moshe adds another custom that developed and addresses this and defends this practice, a custom, and this is very strange, to wear kilayim, to wear shatnez, to wear mixtures of wool and linen on Purim. V'efshar shemizeh, maybe, therefore, nitpashetem in haglil bosh kilayim derabanan bepurim. It became a widespread custom to wear mixtures of wool and linen on a rabbinic level, kilayim derabanan, on Purim. Now, what is kilayim dirabonon? Okay, so it's not exactly clear what the Darkei Moshe here means, but it's a major machloket as to what is considered a violation of Kilayim on a Torah level. Okay, so Shatnez, Mishnah in Masechet Kilayim, defines that Shatnez is this process that the wool and linen has to go through, and it's a question as to what the process exactly is. It's three processes, and according to Rashi, you have to have all three to violate Shatnez on a Torah level. According to Rashi, in order to violate Shatnez on a Torah level, the thread itself would have to be spun with both wool and linen. Not enough for Rashi to violate Shatnez on a Torah level to have, like, you know, many people have their suits checked. Why? Because the suit is made of wool, but maybe the thread that was used is linen. So, at least for Rashi, that would not be a violation of Shatnez on a Torah level. For Rashi, the wool and linen have to be spun into thread together. Okay, well, the Rabbeinu Tam argues on Rashi, as does the Rambam. Without getting into that, again, beyond the scope of our discussion this morning, there's a distinction between Shatnez de Oraita and Shatnez de Rabbonan. So at least with regards to Shatnez de Rabbonan, we can find some leniencies. It's only rabbinic in nature. Okay? Even according to the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam, there are also examples of Shatnez de Rabbonan as well. But again, that's beyond the scope of our discussion this morning. So he writes that ve'osin l'simcha, right? Why do they wear these garments? Why are they wearing these costumes? It's part of the simcha. Deharei ro'in dafilu isur de'oraita docha, ki lo mitkaven kol shekein kilayim derabanan. So we see that the prohibition of theft, which is a Torah prohibition, is pushed off because of the simchat purim, because of the merrymaking. And if that's the intent, then so too, kilayim, dirabbanan, on a rabbinic level, should certainly be allowed. Okay? And then, skipping to where I've underlined next, he writes, Nira lili yashev haminhag mehad amrinan beperek bata de kilayim. Now he brings a very interesting example. Umevi la beperek hagozel bata de mudol yabosh kilayim kidei lavir hameches. Okay. This is very interesting. The Mishnah in Kilayim, as well as the Gemara in Bava Batra, Bava Kama, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, discusses wearing costume, or wearing clothes, I should say, wearing clothes in order to get around from paying taxes. Now, the context there is that the Gentile government has made or proclaimed unfair taxes on the Jewish community. We're not telling you to cheat the IRS. We're not telling you to cheat on your taxes or here, Mas Hachnasa, right? But when a corrupt government imposes unfair taxes on the Jews, so you can wear kilayim, you can wear prohibited mixtures of wool and linen to get out of those taxes. What does that mean? So either it means that we're talking about a tax maybe on clothing. You're a merchant, you are a Jewish importer, exporter, right, of textiles, of clothing, of cloth, and they put taxes maybe on the items, on the garments. But if you wear them, right, you don't have to pay a tax. It's only if you're holding them you have to pay a tax. So how do you get out of paying this unfair tax that was on the Jews? By wearing them. But it has kilayim. Okay, we're going to allow you to wear kilayim in order to get out of paying this tax. Or, as some explained, it was a head tax, that they put taxes on each and every individual Jew. Well, so how do you get out of such a tax? You dress up like a Gentile. Oh, how do you dress up like a Gentile? Well, you wear Gentile clothing. But Gentile clothing has wool and linen in it. That's not a problem. The Chachamim, our rabbis, allowed one to wear clothing with kilayim in order to get around this unfair tax. And so he continues and writes, Dichi eino mikavein lelivisha. Shari, since the intent is not to wear the garment, it is permitted. The kol shekein lefi miktzat mifarshim sheperu shusham delovshim kidei shelo yakiruhu shehu yudi. As we said, certainly according to those who explain this allowance in light of those who would dress up as non-Jews in order to get out of this tax, so they wouldn't recognize that they were Jewish. So you see, here too, it should be allowed, wearing costumes on Purim of Kilayim, whether it's masks or whether it's costumes. Why? Because it's only dressing up, and dressing up is not called wearing. That's what he wants to say. You don't have the intent of wearing. The hu adin bepurim, and so too on Purim. That's the law on Purim. That's the din. Kein nira li tam haminhag. That appears to me to be the reason for the custom, or at least why it should be allowed. Aval tov lahachmir v'lavod et Hashem b'simcha v'liot gila birada. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. He says, but better to be machmir, to be stringent, not to dress in women's clothing, or for a woman not to wear man's clothing on Purim, and not to wear kilayim, to serve Hashem with simcha, and as the pasuk in Tehillim says, gilu birada, serve Hashem with joy, but balance that joy with fear and trembling. Okay. And that's important. We'll come back to that line. It would seem that the Ramah is not giving a heter here, allowing it lechatchila. He's not recommending it, but more he's defending the practice. We'll come back to that. Because the Ramah, source number two, in Hilchot Purim, right? We saw his Darkei Moshe, source number one, but in his glosses to the Shulchan Aruch, source number two, the Ramah defends the practice again. The custom to wear faces or masks on Purim, and men dressing like women, and women dressing like men. It's not prohibited, since the intent is only for simcha, for rejoicing, part of the merrymaking. And so too, wearing kilayim that is on a rabbinic level, which we explained. There are those who say that it is prohibited. But the minhag is according to the original, or the first opinion, meaning that it is permitted. So here in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah permits dressing up in clothing of the opposite sex on Purim, as well as wearing costumes or masks of kilayim. However, here in source number three, the Mishnah Brura cites just some of the many achronim that disagree with the Ramah. The Bach, and the Taz, and the Shlah. Okay, so this is a controversial custom, and many Achronim disagree with it. Many Poskei Edot HaMizrach do as well. Here in source number four, I gave you the very end of a lengthy tshuva by Rav Avadi Yosef, where he at least addresses the issue of dressing up in clothing that belong to the opposite sex, the isur of lo yilbash gever simlat isha, and he says that it's prohibited. Okay, he says a line shlohu tar lavor al isur Torah bishil simchat Purim. We don't allow you to violate a prohibition from the Torah because of simchat Purim. As important as simchat Purim is, it doesn't allow you to transgress a mitzvah or an isur in the Torah, right? Okay, so you see, even contemporary poskim take issue with this. Although in many circles, you do see men dressing like women and women dressing like men on Purim. And for those who do, yesh al mi li smoch. It's interesting. The Prima Gadim there gives a sort of a hachra'a. He sort of finds some justification to at least wear one garment that belongs to the opposite sex. So, you could put on a wig, but to put on a wig and a full dress, that's already too much, the Prima Gadim. He allows you to put on just one thing. The Aruch HaShulchan, however, writes that the Ramah, and certainly if you look at this in light of what he writes at the very end of his Darkei Moshe, source number one, Tafresh Tzadivav, the Aruch HaShulchan says that the Ramah is not giving a heter. The Ramah is not telling you that it's permitted. The Ramah is defending the practice in his day, but he's certainly not recommending it for our day. And the Aruch HaShulchan says it has no place in our day. He's not giving you a heter, telling you to do it in our generation. He's defending what was done in his generation. He lived in the 16th century. Okay, fine. Now, what's interesting is it's dafka the Ramah who raises this issue in his Darkei Moshe, and he permits it in his comments on the Shulchan Aruch. And there is a famous account, albeit an apocryphal tale, but a famous account of the very Ramah dressing in costume on Purim. Now, we don't know if he was wearing women's clothing. We don't know if his costume contained wool and linen, but there is at least some mention in a few different sources of him wearing a costume on Purim, and you'll see why, and it's fascinating. Here in source number 5, at the very bottom of the page, is a passage, it's really a footnote, from a sefer called Lev HaIvri, which is a perush on the spiritual will of the Chatam Sofer. Chatam Sofer, the revered Moshe Sofer, Rav and Rosh Yeshiva of Presburg, which what was Bratislava, and today is in Slovakia. It's Bratislava in Slovakia. It was in Hungary, and today it's in Slovakia, Bratislava. But the Chatam Sofer left this almost cryptic tzava, okay, with all sorts of important information and allusions and commands to his children and directions and important material. And Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger, who I'll talk about in a moment, because he was a fascinating rabbinic figure, Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger, he writes a commentary on this tzava of the Chatam Sofer. Okay, he extrapolates it and expands, and there's all sorts of rimazim and hints at psukim and Mamare Chazal and different things. So he writes this very interesting commentary on the spiritual of the Chatam Sofer. And in that commentary, we'll see, he shares the following. But just first, Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger, because it's important to just get some context, who he was, when he lived. He lived from 1837 to 1922. He was born in Hungary. And in fact, his father was a close Talmud of the Chatam Sofer. His father learned by the Chatam Sofer, and the story goes that at his brit, they heard of the death of Rabbi Akiva Eger, who was the father-in-law of the Chatam Sofer, even though they were around the same age, just about a year apart. The Chatam Sofer, Bezivug Sheni, his second marriage, he married the daughter of Rabbi Akiva Eger. This correspondence between the two, he refers to him as his saintly father-in-law, light of all of Israel. They shared a beautiful relationship. So in any case, this Akiva Yosef Schlesinger was named for Rabbi Akiva Eger, and he himself learned in the Presburg Yeshiva under the son of the Chatam Sofer, the Ktav Sofer, or the Ksav Sofer. Right? Okay? And he learned there, and he also learned under the Maharam Shik, who was a close Talmud of the Chatam Sofer. And eventually, he makes Aliyah. He moves to Israel following a series of dreams. This is in 1870. Following a series of dreams telling him to make Aliyah, he moves to Israel and becomes a very important figure in the Yishuv HaYashan, very important rabbinic presence here in Yerushalayim in the late 19th century and early 20th century. But a controversial figure. He's involved in things like the Chidush, the renaissance and renewal of Tchelet in our day. Okay, he's involved in questions of maybe restoring the sacrificial order, the Avodah, certainly the Korban Pesach in our day. He's involved in things like maybe restoring polygamy, okay, marrying more than one wife in our day, and blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah when the first day of Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat, as it often does. Okay, and there's a whole discussion of whether it can be blown in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, whether it can be blown in as part of a Beit Din, a recognized Beit Din. There's all sorts of discussions. So he had a lot of very unique ideas. So in any case, he writes this sefer on this tzava of the Chatam Sofer called Lev HaIvri. Okay? So here, look at source number 5. He writes, Shamati, this is a footnote there, Shamati ma'aseh meharamazal. I heard this story, the print is not great, has not been digitized, but you'll bear with us. I heard this story about the Ramazal, Asher Meit ben Lamed Gimel Shanim, who died at the age of 33. Now this is actually not accurate, but it works with the theme, you'll see, but it's not actually accurate. He dies at 52, not at 33, but okay. You know, Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger wasn't necessarily a historian, but the story he heard was the Rama dies at 33. And Bilag Ba'omer, he dies on the 33rd day of the Omer. Now that is true. That is correct. Okay. I think I've mentioned that in the past when we've spoken about Lag Ba'omer. Not so clear that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai died on Lag Ba'omer, but we do know that the Rama died on Lag Ba'omer. And people go to, those who don't go to Meiron, go to Krakow. Some go to Krakow on Lag Ba'omer, to the grave of the Rama. The Asa Lamed Gimel Sfarim. And he wrote 33 books. I'm not aware if that's correct or not. Okay, let's assume it is. The Saptan Siper Alav Lamed Bet Shvachim. But the eulogizer, the one giving the eulogy in there in Krakow at the funeral, he gave 32 right, 32 praises. He spoke 32 praises of the Rama. So here we have this theme of 33, and the eulogizer could only think of 32 praises. V'haya mitzteher atzmo limtzo od shevach echad lashlim inyan lamed gimel. So he was upset that he couldn't think of another praise, a 33rd praise, to get to this magical number of 33. Ad sheba zaken echad v'amar shemin hagra mazal haya bechol purim levosh partzuf. Until some elder there in Krakow got up and said, I have a 33rd praise of the Rama. Every Purim, he would wear a mask and he would put on a costume and he would vitzaak bechol bayit asher ma'ariv bizmano v'zehaya shevach lamed gimel shelo. He would go around and he would call out, Ma'ariv, Ma'ariv. Right? Everyone has had a little bit too much to drink. Maybe they're schluffing a little bit. And he would knock on the doors. He would call out Ma'ariv and get people to come to the shul to daven. And that was the 33rd praise. Now, it's interesting because the Rama himself gives you, in Tafresh Tzadihei, sort of the seder of events, as far as the day of Purim goes, that one should daven mincha early in the day because he's then going to have the suda afterwards and he's going to drink a little bit. Right, and you want to make sure you daven mincha, and then he should eat and drink and whatever, but make sure to daven ma'ariv afterwards. Okay, and the Rama actually cites the kolbo, that a person should drink not too much. You shouldn't drink to excess. He should drink a little more than he's used to. Yoter milumdo. And what? And then, like the Rambam, he cites the Rambam as well. He should fall asleep, take a little shluf, and like that, he'll fulfill the obligation of Adelo Yada, not knowing the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, by going to sleep. So it would make sense that the Rama would have to wake people up to daven Ma'ariv, right? The poskim say, how's it possible? You're going to get drunk and you'll miss davening Ma'ariv and you'll miss Kriyat Shema, which is a mitzvah min haTorah. So the Rama would dress up in costume and go around knocking like the Shulklopfer. Right? They have pictures from, you know, Europe, like Roman Vishniak's pictures, beautiful pictures of you know, Yidden in the Shtetlach. There was one Yid, and his job was to wake everyone up in the morning. He would go around knocking on shutters. He would have a little hammer or use his hand and knock on doors and shutters, waking people up for minyan. That's what the Rama would do. He would wear a costume and do that on Purim. Is this story true or not? I don't know, but it's a beautiful story and just interesting that the same Rama who brings this custom to dress up in costume on Purim, it's told of how he himself, Bichvodo Uva Atzmo, would dress up on Purim. Okay, but why? What's the reason behind it? The Rama defends the practice, but doesn't give us the tam, the rhyme or reason. It's such a strange custom, right? So some explain it has to do with the topsy-turvy nature of the day. V'nahafochu, right? Everything was turned upside down. It was a turnabout, a turn of events. The Jews who were destined for destruction, all of a sudden, they have the upper hand on their enemies. And so everything is upside down. it's topsy-turvy day like my kids sometimes have at school or camp, topsy-turvy day. Well, that is Purim. And that's why we drink to excess. Again, not too much. And we wear masks and there's all this merrymaking. Okay, it has to do with the upside-down nature. Maybe it has to do with the hiddenness of the day. We know that in the story of Purim, Hashem is hidden. Hashem's name is not mentioned. Okay, the Gemara in Chulin asks, where is there a source in the Torah for Esther? Esther min haTorah minayin, and brings the pasuk, Anochi haster astir. Hashem says, I'm going to surely hide my face. There's an idea of hester panim. Hashem's presence, so to speak, is hidden amidst suffering. Okay, but we know that he's there all along, working, pulling the strings behind the scenes on the stage that is Jewish history. He's behind the curtain, so to speak. So maybe it has to do with this theme of Hester Panim. And when we read the Megillah, Megillat Esther, some explain it, it's sort of a remiss to, we are Megale, we reveal the Hester, the hidden. Okay? We read the text and recognize that Hashem is there all along. He's pulling the strings behind the curtain on the stage that is Jewish history. So some explain that that is maybe the reason why we wear costume, because everything's hidden, so we hide ourselves, we hide our faces, right? Or maybe for some, Purim is the one day a year when they take off the mask, right? And let their true essence shine. You've got people that are so litvish the whole year. On Purim, they put on a strimel and a bekisha and dress up like a chassid. Why? Because that's what their neshama really wants. They have a chassidish neshama. Right? The one day a year when they let their hair down, so to speak, and take off the mask is Purim. So maybe it has to do with this theme of hiddenness and masks. Okay. They say that according to the Baal Shem Tov, it actually has to do with tzedakah. We have a mitzvah of Matanot Levyonim, of course, on Purim. And there's a mitzvah to give tzedakah. And we say that on Purim, Kol Poshet Yad, right? Not Nimlo. Anyone who extends their hand, you should give to them on Purim. There's a Chassidish Vort that just like, you know, anyone who extends their hand, right, you should give to such a person. So too, on Purim, we should extend our hands heavenward and daven to Hashem, and Hashem will give to us. Kol poshet yad, not nimlo. So, maybe it has to do with the mitzvah of tzedakah, and the highest level of tzedakah is what? Matan beseter, giving the donation anonymously. Giving the gift, giving the tzedakah anonymously. Well, how do you give tzedakah anonymously? On Purim, you wear a costume and you give tzedakah, and no one knows who you are. And the recipient is also wearing a mask, wearing a costume. You don't know who the recipient is, and that's the highest level of tzedakah. When both the one giving the tzedakah and the one receiving the tzedakah doesn't know who is who, that's the highest level of tzedakah. But what I'd like to suggest is, and I think this is obvious, and I'm certainly not the first one to suggest it, what I'd like to suggest is that maybe the custom to dress up on Purim is rooted in the story of Esther itself, in the Megillah that we will shortly read on Purim. Okay? And so take a look at the top of the next side, source number 6, turn the page. At the beginning of the book of Esther, the Megillah describes a series of banquets that Ahasuerus has in the third year of his reign, and he's showing off all of his wealth. Beharoto et osher kvod malchuto ve'et yikar tiferet gedulato. He's showing off the glory, the splendor, the grandeur. Where else do we have these words, kavod and tiferet, or kavod and tifaret? Right? Your ears should be ringing. Any suggestions? Where in the Torah do we find that lashon, those expressions? Maybe pasuk vav will give you a hint. Okay, maybe that will give you the answer. Chur karpas utchelet achuz bechavlei vutz v'agaman al glilei kesef amudvi sheish mitot zahav achesef al ritzpat bahad v'sheish v'dar v'socharet. All these beautiful tapestries that he's showing off as part of these banquets, right? Tapestries that contain different colors. Karpas is like a green. Tchelet is a wool dye, this royal blue, right? Tchelet. Bechavlei boots, argaman. Argaman's another color. He's showing off these tapestries and these couches and things. Okay. Where do we have this lashon? Tchelet, argaman, boots, sheish. Right? Where do we have such words? Oh, in the Mishkan, but specifically where? By the Bigdei Kuhuna. By the Bigdei Kuhuna. Okay? As we will read in a week and a half in Parshat Titzaveh, right? The mitzvah to construct, to make clothing for Aaron Ubana, for the Kohanim, right? What's the mitzvah? Ve'asita v'gdei kodesh l'Aaron achicha. Moshe is commanded to make these holy vestments for his brother Aaron. L'chavod ulitif aret. For glory and splendor. Same lashon, kavod and tiferet. Kavod and tiferet. Right? Same lashon. And it repeats over and over again. And then, concerning the ephod, the vest of the high priest, right? And you have similar materials as part of the other vestments as well, but just reading there from Perek Chafchet, Pasuk Vav, okay? V'asu et ha'efod, zahav techelet v'argaman. So here we have techelet and argaman. Tolat shani v'sheish, right? Here we have sheish as well. And boots is mentioned elsewhere. So it would seem that we have at the beginning of Esther a hint to these psukim in Parshat Tetzaveh concerning the clothing of the high priest. Incredible. Okay? It's as if the author of the Megillah is drawing intentionally on these psukim and trying to say something. Okay? There's this intertextuality. It's incredible. And as we'll see in a moment, Chazal were sensitive to this. Now, first, what's interesting is, I mentioned that, you know, Tchelet and Argaman are wools that are dyed with blue and purple, but it refers to a wool that is dyed. And what is boots? Chavlei boots. What is boots? What is sheish? Anyone know? They are types of linens. So here you have wool and linen. Now, it's interesting. We mentioned that there was this custom to wear clothing belonging to the opposite sex, a very controversial custom. The Mahari Mintz defends the custom. The Ramah defends the custom. And, you know, as crazy as it sounds, we can somewhat understand why on Purim you'd want to do such a thing. It's topsy-turvy. It's upside down, right? Everything is the opposite. Venahafochu, right? But why would there be a custom to wear wool and linen? That's very strange, right? What's the gain there? I understand why it's silly, why it's crazy, why it's wild for a man to put on women's clothing on Purim. But to put on wool and linen, shatnez, right? Mahakesher. So it's interesting. We'll see. Maybe there is even a reason for that custom as well, okay? But first, here you have in the first perek of Esther, right? It would seem like you have a hint to the clothing of the high priest, which, by the way, contained wool and linen. Okay? The ephod, the vest of the high priest, or according to Rashi, it was more of like an apron. Okay? According to the way the Rambam has it, it was more of a vest. But the ephod contained shatnez, as did the choshen, as did the avnet, the belt. There's a machloket tanaim whether the belt for the kohen hedyot, the ordinary kohen, also contains shatnez or not. Okay? So what's interesting is for Chazal, in their reading of Esther, this wasn't lost on them, that the author seems to be drawing on the psukim in Parsha Tetzaveh. It's the same words, the same lashon, kavod and tiferet. Chur, karpas, tchelet, achuz bechav levutz, argaman, sheish. It sounds just like the clothing of the high priest. And so take a look here at source number 13. The Gemara in Megillah Daf Yud Aleph
says what? Melamed shelavash bigdei kuna. Yeah. It comes to teach that Achashverosh wore the clothing of the high priest, because there it's written, again, in Esther, Yikar Tiferet Gedulato, it's written in the first parak of Esther, Kavod and Tiferet, and Uktiv Hatam, and it's written there in Parshat Tetzaveh, Lichavod Ulitifaret. It's the same Lashon. Okay. In fact, there's a custom to write a Megillah, when you write a Megillah, to write the word Chur with a very large chet. I don't know if you've seen it in a Megillah, sometimes in the printed versions as well. The letter chet for the word chur is very large. Why? That's a reference to the chet, the eight. Chet is eight, right? The shmona begadim, the eight special garments of the high priest. Because there's this tradition that Achashverosh wore the clothing of the Kohen Gadol at his feasts. Now, why would the king wear the clothing of the high priest from Jerusalem there as part of his banquets, as part of his feasts? What is Achashverosh doing? Why is he interested in the clothing of the Kohen Gadol? Okay. So the Gemara also says there that he served on the vessels, on the kelim, from the temple as well. He had inherited them from the previous king, the Babylonian king, and the Babylonian kings, I should say, and he served on them as well, and that's alluded to when we read the Megillah publicly, and many have the custom to read that pasuk or those words, v'chelim mikelim shonim. They were all sorts of vessels, right? To the sad mangina, the sad tam or trup of Eicha, the sad melody, v'chelim mikelim shonim. Okay. Hope I did it justice. So, why? Because there's this tradition that he was serving on the vessels of the Holy Temple. Why is he serving on the vessels of the Holy Temple? Why is he wearing the clothing of the high priest? And the answer is, according to Chazal, he was celebrating the fact that the temple was destroyed and that the Jewish people had not been redeemed. He calculated the 70 years of exile. And that's why he begins his banquet. Normally you have these inaugural balls that our president throws. It's usually right after they are elected. But here he waits till the third year. Why? Because he's counting up the 70 years, because the banquets have nothing to do with his reign. The banquets are celebrating the downfall of the Jewish people, our destruction, and how, according to him, we will never be redeemed. Because the 70 years of exile has lapsed according to his cheshbon, according to his count or his accounting, and we were not redeemed. And so for him, that means we will never be redeemed. Okay, and that's why he brought out the vessels from the holy priest, and that's why, according to Chazal, he wore the clothing of the high priest. It's about the downfall of the Jewish people, and we know that this very Achashverosh, it's recorded in Sefer Ezra, he makes a sitna. He places a stoppage, a work stoppage. You know how like in Jerusalem, you've got these construction sites that go on for 10, 15, 20 years, okay? Well, the temple, they had started construction for the temple. King Cyrus, Melech Koresh, had already given, we've spoken about this in the past, had already given the Jewish people permission to come and return to their land and rebuild their holy temple. However, most of the Jews stayed in Bavel, okay? The Nevi'im, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi are begging the people to come and return and complete the building. They're not coming. They're not finishing the building. Achashverosh places a work stoppage, a sitna. Rashi, in his comments on the Megillah by the 10 sons of Haman, says, yeah, these 10 sons, what did they do wrong? They were involved in that same work stoppage. Okay, they also were involved with their father in preventing the Jewish people from building their holy temple. So here, Achashverosh, with these feasts, with these banquets, is celebrating the fact that the Jewish people are in exile and will be in exile forever. So he serves on the vessels of the holy temple, and he wears the vestments of the high priest. And not just he, but according to Chazal in the Medrash, in Esther Rava, here in source number 14, Vashti also wore the clothing of the high priest. Why? It says, Gam Vashti HaMalka Asta Mishte Nashim. Vashti also wanted to make banquets for women, and she wanted everything that her husband had. If he served sushi, I'm going to have sushi, right? If he If he wore the clothing of the high priest, I want the clothing of high priest as well. Okay, just like he wore the vestments of the high priest, so too she. Okay? And we're going to come back to this in a moment. But the theme of dressing up seems to continue throughout. It's a theme throughout the Megillah. In fact, Esther, one might say, hides her Jewishness, and one might say, is wearing a mask. Source number 7, Lo higida Esther et ama vet moladeta. She doesn't tell anyone that she's Jewish, right? She is in hiding. She too is in costume. She too is wearing a mask. Okay? Now in source number 8, when Mordechai hears that, what, Achashverosh has given his gushpanka, his stamp of approval, to Haman's final solution to destroy the Jews, Vayilbash Sakva Efer, he too removes his clothing and puts on something else, some other type of garment. He puts on sackcloth, right? But finally, when they come to get him, Esther sends him garments because he can't come to the palace wearing sackcloth, right? So she sends him garments, lehalbish et Mordechai, ulasir sakom elav. Again, there's costume changes taking place, okay? Esther, before she goes, here in source number 9, to greet the king, to meet the king, to speak to the king, vatilbash Esther malchut. She wears her royal garments. Again, there's a costume change taking place. She removes her clothes and puts on other clothes, her royal garments. By the way, at the end, we will talk about how Mordechai wears royal garments at the end of the Megillah. And Rav Chaim Falachi, he says something interesting. You know, those who don't wear costumes on Purim, what do they wear on Purim? They wear Shabbat clothes, Yom Tov clothes, the Maharil, and the Ramah, by the way, the same Ramah who makes mention of the Minhag to wear costumes. The Ramah says, based on the Maharil, that one should wear their Shabbat clothes or their Yom Tov clothes on Purim. Because Purim is it's a festival. It has this festive atmosphere to it. And Rav Chaim Palachi says the idea to wear your Shabbos garments is rooted in these psukim. How Esther wore her royal garments and Mordechai wears the royal garments at the end, we'll see in a few moments. What are our royal garments, so to speak? Our Shabbos and Yom Tov clothes. Okay? Fine. And then here in source number 10, this idea of, again, putting on clothing here, the royal garments, the Levush Malchut. What do? Asks Achashverosh of Haman for someone whom the king wants to reward. Well, you put him in the king's clothes, right? Asher Lavash Bo HaMelech. So Mordechai is dressed up again, Vihilbishu et Ha'ish. Haman has to dress him up, okay? And then what? When Haman returns back home after parading Mordechai all around in the king's costumes, again, this theme of costumes, this motif of costumes, Haman comes home, Avel the Chafui Rosh. Right? He's mourning, according to the Chachamim. His daughter jumps out the window, off the roof. Why? Because she drops the garbage on him, thinking it was Mordechai leading her husband on the horse, but rather it was Haman, her father. So she comes home, or rather, he comes home Chafui Rosh, as well as an Avel. He comes home Chafui Rosh, according to Chazal, because he's got this garbage on his head. Once she sees his daughter, that she threw garbage on her father and not on Mordechai, right? She jumps to her death, and that's why he's in Avelut, so to speak. He's in mourning. But this idea of Avel v'Chafui Rosh, Chafui Rosh, it means his head is covered. It can be understood figuratively, or certainly it's connected to when he's finally sentenced to death. Achashverosh sees him on top of Esther pleading for his life, and Achashverosh asks, "Hagam lichboshet amalkai mi babayit?" Right? You want to also take the queen while I'm still here in the palace? Hadavar yatsa mipi amelech upnei Haman chafu. And as soon as the words, the pronouncement, the proclamation came out of the mouth of King Ahasuerus, the head of Haman was covered. What does that mean? Could mean, again, downtrodden, covered, or no, masked, covered in a hood. They used to put hoods on those who were to be hanged. Okay? But definitely there's this connection between Chafui Rosh in Perek Vav and Upnei Haman Chafu in Perek Zayin. Again, this theme of costumes, this theme of here now hiding his face, covering over his face. And finally, at the very end of the Megillah, or towards the very end of the Megillah, in Perek Chet, okay, Umordechai Yatzah Milifnei HaMelech, source number 12, Bilvush Malchut, Tchelet Vachur Va'ateret Zahav Gedola V'Tachrich Butz V'Argaman V'Ha'ir Shushan Tzahala V'Samecha. Here Mordechai is dressed up in the king's garments, and it's a question whether it was just this one time or perhaps for the rest of his life he was to wear these royal garments. Now, what about these royal garments? So Tchelet, we said, is what? It's blue, but it's wool that's dyed blue. Okay, so he's wearing chur and tchelet, and this, of course, invokes perek aleph pasuk vav, chur karpas utchelet achuz bechav levutz, the different wonderful tapestries that Ahasuerus is showing off at his feast, right? These different tapestries, these different cloths, which we said that in Chazal's reading is a reference to what? The big day kahuna. But take a look. Mordechai is dressed in these royal garments, tchelet vachur va'ateret zahav gedola, this large golden crown, v'tachrich butz va'argaman. Right? And some sort of tachrich, some sort of garment, maybe a headdress of boots. What did we say boots was? Linen. V'argaman. What is argaman? It's purple, but it's wool dyed purple. Right? So you have boots and you have argaman together in this tachrich. So that's what? Shatnez. That's kilayim. So here you have Mordechai wearing kilayim. What's this about? What's this about? We said that according to Chazal, these tapestries and cloths with their beautiful colors is actually a reference to the Big Day Kahuna, how Ahasuerus was showing off the kelim from the Beit HaMikdash, the vessels, the vestments of the high priest. He wore them, according to the Medrash, Vashti even wore them. And here, at the very end of the Megillah, Mordechai is dressed up in these royal garments, and royal garments that contain what? Shatnez, kilayim. Okay? So maybe this is why there developed a custom, which the Rama mentions, for people on Purim to wear kilayim, right? You could ask, I understand, you know, why on Purim some were wearing women's clothing and some women were wearing men's clothing. It's a topsy-turvy day. Everything's upside down, part of the merrymaking. But why the kilayim, right? You know, what's the source for that? What, they couldn't find costumes without kilayim, or they couldn't get them shatnez tested at the shatnez lab? They were ordering them from China, the costumes from Amazon.com, like my wife does for the kids, right? He could find a nice selection with good prices. Maybe there's a concern of shatnez. What's the reason behind this custom that developed to wear costumes which contain kilayim and shatnez? And maybe this is the answer, that it's Mordechai who's wearing these royal garments which contain shatnez, and maybe they were dressing up like who? They were dressing up like Mordechai. They were wearing royal garments to look like Mordechai, royal garments which contain shatnez. And maybe that's how we can understand and explain the custom that developed. Okay? And again, what's interesting, it's not just the argaman, the boots, the wool and linen. And by the way, you know, we have to try and account for that. How could Mordechai be wearing those garments, right? If they indeed contain shatnez, well, how could Mordechai wear them? And if you want to say, well, maybe they are the clothing of the high priest, we'll come back to that in a moment, but Mordechai was not the high priest in Jerusalem. Okay? So what's he doing wearing those garments? So you could say, well, Mordechai, had to wear those garments. It was an edict of the king, and maybe it's pikuach nefesh, it's hatzalais, saving the entire Jewish nation, and that would allow him to wear kilayim on a Torah level. Remember, we made a distinction between kilayim de'oraita and kilayim de'rabanan. Or maybe he falls into this category of karov l'malchut. There's a special dispensation for those who have close ties, close connections to the leadership, karov l'malchut, and can intercede on behalf of the Jewish people. There's a special dispensation which allows them to violate at least mitzvot d'rabanan, rabbinic mitzvot. So maybe it's kilayim d'rabanan, and that's why Mordechai was allowed to wear these garments, which contained in them both boots, which is linen, and argaman and tchelet, which is wool that is dyed with either blue or purple. Okay? But again, these words hearken back to what? These words, right? Argaman, tchelet, boots, it's the big day kahuna. So maybe it could be that what? That what the Megillah is trying to say here, and I don't know if we even have to explain it literally, but certainly in the reading of Chazal, where Achashverosh is celebrating the downfall and destruction of the Jewish people and serving on the kelim from the Mikdash and wearing the clothing of the high priest, he returns those very garments, those garments that are referred to or hinted at in the beginning of the Megillah, right? Here in source number 6, which are lechavod ulitifaret and contain chur and karpas and tchelet achuz bechavle boots and sheish and agaman and all these things that we find by the big day kahuna in Parsha Tetzaveh, right? Maybe he's in a certain sense, in a conceptual way at least, returning these garments to the rightful owner. Okay? The garments that Mordechai receives at the end, which are made from these same materials, these royal garments, maybe again it's a reference to the garments of the high priest, the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. And maybe, at least in a conceptual way, right? Even if it's not literal, in a conceptual way, Achashverosh is restoring these vestments, the vestments of the high priest, to the Jewish people, to their rightful owners, to Mordechai. Okay, not that Mordechai was wearing the clothing of the high priest, but maybe that's what this is hinting at. The same Achashverosh who's wearing, so to speak, the clothing of the high priest and showing it off and celebrating the downfall of the Jewish people and how they will never be redeemed. Okay, you have at the very end those same materials being described in the clothing that is given to Mordechai to wear. And in a certain sense, maybe Mordechai is restoring the kavod and the tiferet, the glory and splendor and grandeur to the Jewish people. Take care. Have a wonderful day. Chodesh Tov. I will wish you all a Purim Sameach. I won't be here next week. The following week is Purim. So I will see you all Be'ezrat Hashem, March 15th. Take care.